Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahadeyantara Bhavahai Tejasvi Navadi Damastrama Vidvishavahai Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivastani Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So previously the sisters Kadru and Vinata, who had gotten the blessings of their husband, Kashyapa, and one had 1,000 snakes for sons, and the other had Aruna and Garuda. So they had wagered, made a bet, that Uchaisrava's tail was black or white. And then whoever lost, then the other would be a slave to the other sister. Right? So then, in doing this, then Kadru, she was very serious to win, so she ordered her sons, the snakes, to take the form of black hares and then go and sit on the tail of Uchaisrava so that it would look black. And the snakes were not, they were afraid of doing this, but she cursed them that they would all be killed in the fire sacrifice of Janamejaya. So Brahma then, when this curse happened, he approved it because the snakes were getting very powerful with all their poison. They were biting people and this and that. So it would actually benefit the universe that this curse that the mother had given. So now we see is that the day had come. They had made this in the one day, and the next day they were going to go visit Uchaisrava. So this is section 21 of the Astika Parva. Sauti said, "Then, when the night had passed away and the sun had risen in the morning, O thou whose wealth is asceticism, the two sisters, Kadru and Vinata, having laid a wager about slavery, went with haste and impatience to view the steed Uchaisravas from a near point. On their way they saw the ocean, that receptacle of waters, vast and deep, rolling and tremendously roaring, full of fishes large enough to swallow the whale." Right? These are Timilingas, right? They eat whales for breakfast. "And abounding with huge makaras and creatures of various forms by thousands, and rendered inaccessible by the presence of other terrible monster-shaped, dark and fierce aquatic animals, abounding with tortoises and crocodiles, the mine of all kinds of gems, the home of Varuna, the water god, the excellent and beautiful residence of the Nagas, the lord of all the rivers, the abode of the subterranean fire," because there's a fire that burns under the ocean, like that, that's like that, and that, yeah. "The friend or asylum of the Asuras, the terror of all creatures, the grand reservoir of water and ever immutable. It is wholly beneficial to the gods, and is the great source of nectar, without limits, inconceivable, sacred, and highly wonderful. It is dark, terrible, with the sound of aquatic creatures, tremendously roaring and full of deep whirlpools. It is an object of terror to all creatures. Moved by the winds blowing from its shores and heaving high, agitated and disturbed, it seems to dance everywhere with uplifted hands, represented by its surges, full of swelling billows caused by the waxing and waning of the moon. means by the how the moon is when it becomes, when it waxes, it gets stronger, then the pulling of the water is more, so the waves and tides are stronger. And then as it goes down, then the waves and tides are smaller. The parent of Vasudeva's great conch called Panchajanya, the great mine of gems, its waters were formerly disturbed in consequence of the agitation caused within them by the Lord Govinda of immeasurable prowess, when he had assumed the form of a wild boar for raising the submerged earth. Its bottom lower than the nether regions, the vow observing regenerate Rishi Atri could not fathom after toiling for 100 years. It becomes the bed of the lotus navel Vishnu, when at the termination of every yuga, that deity of immeasurable power enjoys yoga nidra, the deep slumber under the spell of spiritual meditation. It is the refuge of Mainaka, fearful of falling thunder, and the retreat of the asuras, overcome in fierce encounters. Right? It means, in other words, whenever they become, they're in battle, if it doesn't look like they're going to win, then they go and retreat back to the ocean. They go and hide there. It offers water as sacrificial butter to the blazing fire issuing from the mouth of Varuna. It is fathomless and without limits, vast and immeasurable, and the Lord of rivers. And they saw unto it rushing mighty rivers by thousands with proud gait, like amorous competitors, each eager for meeting it, forestalling the others. And they saw that it was always full and always dancing in its waves. And they saw that it was deep and abounding with fierce whales and makaras, and it resounded constantly with the terrible sounds of aquatic creatures. And they saw that it was vast and wide as the expanse of space, unfathomable and limitless, and the grand reservoir of water. And so ends the 21st section in the Astika Parva of the Adi Parva. Section 22. Sauti said, the Nagas, after consultation, arrived at the conclusion that they should do their mother's bidding. For if she failed in obtaining her desire, she might withdraw her affection and burn them all. If, on the other hand, she were graciously inclined, she might free them from her curse. They said, we will certainly render the horse's tail black. And it is said that they then went and became hares in the horse's tail. Now the two co-wives had laid the wager. And having laid the wager, O best of Brahmanas, the two sisters, Kadru and Binata, the daughters of Daksha, proceeded in great delight along the sky to see the other side of the ocean. And on their way they saw the ocean, that receptacle of waters, incapable of being easily disturbed, mightily agitated all of a sudden by the wind, and roaring tremendously, abounding with fishes capable of swallowing the whale and full of makaras, containing also creatures of diverse forms counted by thousands, frightful from the presence of horrible monsters, inaccessible, deep, and terrible, the mine of all kinds of gems, the home of Varuna, the wonderful inhabitations of the Nagas, the lord of the rivers, the abode of the subterranean fire, the residence of the Asuras and many dreadful creatures, the reservoir of water not subject to decay, aromatic and wonderful, the great source of the Amrita of the celestials, the immeasurable and inconceivable containing waters that are holy, filled to the brim by many thousands of great rivers, dancing as it were in waves. Such was the ocean, full of rolling waves, vast as the expanse of the sky, deep of body, lightened with the flames of subterranean fire, and roaring, which the sisters quickly passed over. So ends the 22nd section in the Astika Parva of the Adi Parva. Section 23. Sauti said, having crossed the ocean, Kadru, of swift speed, accompanied by Vinata, soon alighted near the horse. They then both beheld that foremost of steeds of great speed, with body white as the rays of the moon, but having black hairs in the tail. And observing many black hairs in the tail, Kadru put Vinata, who was deeply dejected, into slavery. And thus Vinata, having lost the wager, entered into a state of slavery and became exceedingly sorry. In the meantime, when his time came, burst forth from the egg without the help of his mother, Garuda of great splendor, enkindling all the points of the universe, means, you know, creating fire. That mighty being ensued with strength, that bird capable of assuming at will any form, of going at will everywhere, and of calling to his aid at will any measure of energy. That means so he could be as powerful as he wants, he could go anywhere he wanted. And take any form he wanted, right? Not bad. Right? Okay. Effulgent like a heap of fire, he shone terribly, of luster equal to that of the fire at the end of the yuga. His eyes were bright like the lightning flash. And soon after birth, that bird grew in size, and increasing his body ascended the skies, fierce and vehemently roaring. He looked as terrible as second ocean fire, and all the deities seeing him sought the protection of Vibhatsu, Agni, and they bowed down to that deity of manifold forms seated on his seat and spake unto him these words, O Agni, extend not thy body, wilt thou consume us? Lo, this huge heap of thy flames is spreading wide. And Agni replied, O ye persecutors of the Asuras, it is not as ye imagine. This is Garuda of great strength, and equal to me in splendor, endued with great energy and born to promote the joy of Vinata. Even the sight of this heap of effulgence hath caused his delusion in you. He is this mighty son of Kasyapa, the destroyer of the Nagas, engaged in the well-being of the gods and the foe of the Daityas and the Rakshasas. Be not afraid of it in the least. Come with me and see. Thus addressed the gods. The gods said, thus addressed the gods from a distance, said, Thou art a rishi, in other words, one cognizant of all mantras, who shares of the largest portion in sacrifices, ever resplendent, the controller along with the rishis, wend their way toward... So they were saying this to Agni. And then with Agni, then they went towards Garuda. The Rishi wended their way towards Garuda and adored him of birds, the presiding spirit of the animate and inanimate universe. Thou art the destroyer of all, the creator of all. Thou art the very Hiranyagarbha. Thou art the progenitor of creation in the form of Daksha and the other Prajapatis. Thou art Indra, the king of the gods. Thou art Hayagriva, the steed-necked incarnation of Vishnu. Thou art the arrow, Vishnu himself, as he became such in the hands of Mahadev at the burning of Tripura. Thou art the lord of the universe. Thou art the mouth of Vishnu. Thou art the four-faced Padmaja. And thou art Brahman. Thou art Agni, Pavana. Thou art knowledge. Thou art illusion, to which we are all subject. Thou art the all-pervading spirit. Thou art the Lord of the gods. Thou art the great truth. Thou art fearless. Thou art ever unchanged. Thou art Brahma, without attributes. Thou art the energy of the sun. Thou art the intellectual functions. Thou art our great protector. Thou art the ocean of holiness. Thou art purity. Thou art benefit. Thou art benefit of the attributes of darkness. Thou art the possessor of the six high attributes. Thou art he who cannot be withstood in contest. From thee have emanated all things. Thou art of excellent deeds. Thou art all that hath been and that hath all that hath not been and all that hath been. Thou art pure knowledge. Thou displayest to us, as Surya does by his rays, this animate and inanimate universe. Thou darkenest the splendor of Surya at every moment, and thou art the destroyer of all. Thou art all that is perishable and all that is imperishable. O thou resplendent as Agni, thou burnest all even as Surya, in his anger burneth all creatures. O terrible one, thou residest even as the fire that destroys everything at the time of the universal dissolution. O mighty Garuda, who movest in the skies, we seek thy protection. O Lord of birds, thy energy is extraordinary. Thy splendor is that of fire. Thy brightness is like that of lightning, that no darkness can approach. Thou reachest the very clouds, and art both the cause and the effect, the dispenser of boons and invincible in prowess. O Lord, this whole universe is rendered hot by thy splendor, bright as the luster of heated gold. Protect these high-souled gods who, overcome by thee and terrified withal, are flying along the heavens in different directions on their celestial cars. O thou best of birds, thou lord of all, thou art the son of the merciful and high-souled Rishi Kasyapa. Therefore be not wroth, but have mercy on the universe. Thou art supreme. O pacify thy anger and preserve us. At thy voice, loud as the roar of the thunder, the 10 points, the skies, the heavens, the earth in our hearts, O bird, thou art continually shaking. O diminish this thy body resembling Agni. At the sight of the splendor resembling that of Yama when in wrath, our hearts lose all equanimity and quake. O thou Lord of birds, be propitious to us who solicit thy mercy. O illustrious one, bestow on us good fortune and joy. And that bird of fair feathers, thus adored by the deities and diverse sections of rishis, reduced his own energy and splendor. And thus ends the 23rd section of the Astika Parva of the Adi Parva. So he was very, very great, Garuda. And he took such a size that was so big that even the demigods became very disturbed, very worried. So then going to him, then they said, so many prayers. Now, this means that all those different aspects of the Lord, some part of it is there. Right? Does that make sense? That does not mean that they become the Lord, right? But some potency of the Lord is there. Krishna has it in unlimited form, all these qualities. And depending upon the station and the devotees, then they get a portion of this qualities. Does that make sense? Right? So the demigods being afraid of his size, because, he just was born, so then, and he can do anything he wants, so the first thing he does is just grow to a huge size. Right? And so then the demigods ask him, reduce the size, stay a little smaller so we can relate to you. And then so he did that. Right? That makes sense.
Why there was 2 chapters on the ocean, just description of the ocean? What was the significance of it?
Well, the ocean means we see is, Krishna says the bodies of water, he is the ocean. So this is why the ocean is the greatest. Right? Because otherwise you just think, okay, it's big. But if you think about it, the water is always going into it. It's never reduced. Other bodies of water can go up and down or disappear, but the ocean doesn't. And it's full of all these creatures that can handle that. It's very strong. It's very powerful. Like that. So then we see that form of how Krishna is the, of all bodies of water, he's the greatest.
It will be also some principle behind it?
Well, water itself is rasa. Everything's based upon it. It's great. It's there. It doesn't go away. It's what everything functions on. So it's very strong. So depending upon how one's observing it and dealing with it, then it can be very nice or very not so nice. Right? Of all the qualities that are there, then the 5 primary rasas and the 7 secondary, then you see, many of them are also very powerful and strong. Chivalry is there, and whore is there. So these elements are there. It gives shelter to everybody. Such great things are able to function there. So then, these are some elements that would be. Yeah. Okay. So section 24. Sauti said, then hearing of and beholding his own body, that bird of beautiful feathers diminished its size. And Garuda said, let no creature be afraid, as ye are in fright at the sight of my terrible form. I shall diminish my energy. Right. So we see here is that even though he's so powerful, he has all these good qualities. That's why they would praise and such, because he wouldn't want anyone to be afraid, right? So therefore he reduced his size. So that's the point, is because someone's powerful, that doesn't mean that now you make others afraid of you. No, that power is to be used properly. It's not for making others afraid. People are already afraid. You don't have to bother with that, you know. Sauti continued, then that bird capable of going everywhere at will, the ranger of the skies capable of calling to his aid any measure of energy, bearing Aruna on his back, wended from his father's house and arrived at his mother's side on the other shore of the great ocean. Right, so he took Aruna, his brother, with him. And then they flew to the other side of the ocean to meet his mother. And he placed Aruna of great splendor in the eastern regions, just at that time when Surya had resolved to burn the worlds with his fierce rays. Shaunaka said, when did the revered Surya resolve at the time to burn the worlds? What wrong was done to him by the gods that provoked his ire? Right? So, you know, you've heard all these stories. Now he said that just when the sun was determined to burn the three worlds, so then he says, so what happened that he wanted to burn the three worlds? Sauti said, O sinless one, when Rahu was drinking nectar among the gods at the time of the churning of the ocean, he was pointed out to the gods by Surya and Soma, and from that time he conceived an enmity towards those deities. And upon this Rahu sought to devour his afflictor, Surya, became wroth and thought, oh, this enmity of Rahu towards me has sprung from my desire of benefiting the gods, and this dire consequence I alone have to sustain. Indeed, at this pass, help I obtain not. Right? It means to benefit the demigods, then Surya pointed out that this is a demon drinking nectar, right? Otherwise, he could have said nothing, and then he would have been also like the gods, and then Rahu could have created so much trouble. But when Rahu had his head cut off, then his anger just went at the sun and the moon. And the other demigods didn't get any of this anger, and nor did they try to help, right? They were just happy they got the nectar, and the whole everything worked out. So that his point is I did all this for the demigods; they're not helping me. So then he became angry. And before the very eyes of the denizens of heaven, I'm going to be devoured, and they brook it quietly. Right? He'll be devoured by Rahu, and they just sit by and very quietly watch. Therefore, for the destruction of the worlds must I strive. And with this resolution, he went to the mountain of the west. And from that place, he began to radiate his heat around for the destruction of the world. And then the great rishis, approaching the gods, spake unto them, lo, in the middle of the night springeth a great heat, striking terror into every heart, right? Because he said he went to the mountain in the west. Right, so it's supposed to be nighttime. So in the middle of the night now, then he's, you know, increasing and burning everything up. Lo, in the middle of the night springeth a great heat, striking terror into every heart, and destructive of the three worlds. Then the gods, accompanied by the rishis, wended to the grandsire, means Lord Brahma, and said unto him, O, what is this great heat today that causeth such panic? Surya hath not yet arisen, still the destruction of the world is obvious. O Lord, what will happen when he doth rise? Right? So they don't know that this is the sun. They say in the west, in the night, there's this great fire coming, and the sun hasn't even come up yet. So when the sun comes up, then you'll have that fire plus the heat of the sun. So what will happen? The grandsire replied, indeed, Surya is prepared to to rise today for the destruction of the world. As soon as he will appear, he will burn everything into a heap of ashes. By me, however, hath the remedy been provided beforehand. The intelligent son of Kasyapa is known to all by the name of Aruna. He is huge of body and of great splendor. He shall stay in front of Surya, doing the duty of his charioteer, and taking away all the energy of the former. And this will ensue the welfare of the worlds, of the rishis, and of the dwellers in heaven. Sauti continued, Aruna, at the behest of the grandsire, did all that he was ordered to do, and Surya rose veiled by Aruna's person. I have told thee now why Surya was in wrath, and how Aruna, the brother of Garuda, was appointed as his charioteer. Hear next of that other question asked by thee a little while ago. Thus ends the 24th section in the Astika Parva of the Adi Parva. Right? So that means that Aruna is actually shielding the universe, right? So he's so big and powerful. Section 15. Sauti said, when that bird of great strength and energy, and capable of going at will to every place, repaired to his mother's side, on the other shore of the great ocean, thither lived Vinata in affliction, defeated in wager and put into a state of slavery. Once Kadru called Vinata, who had prostrated herself before the former, addressing her these words in the presence of her son. O gentle Vinata, there is in the midst of the ocean, in a remote quarter, a delightful and fair region inhabited by the Nagas. Bear me thither. It means, you know, take me there. It means she had to carry him around. Right? At this, that mother of the bird of fair feathers bore on her shoulders the mother of the snakes, and Garuda also, directed by his mother's words, carried on his back the snakes. And that ranger of the skies born of Vinata began to ascend towards the sun, and thereupon the snake, scorched by the rays of the sun, swooned away. Right? So he's put on, the snakes got on his back, but he flew so high near the sun that the heat of the sun made them all faint. Thereupon the snakes, and Kadru, seeing her sons in that state, prayed to Indra, saying, I bow to thee, thou lord of all gods. I bow to thee, thou slayer of Rita. I bow to thee, thou slayer of Namuchi. O thou of a thousand eyes, consort of Sachi, by thy showers be thou the protector of the snakes scorched by the sun. O thou best of the deities, thou art our great protector. O Purandara, thou art able to grant rain in torrents. Thou art Vayu, the air, the clouds, fire, and the lightning of the skies. Thou art the propeller of the clouds. Thou hast been called the great cloud. In other words, that which will darken the universe at the end of the yuga. Thou art the fierce and incomparable thunder and the roaring clouds. Thou art the creator of the worlds and their destroyer. Thou art unconquered. Thou art the light of all creatures, Aditya, Vibhatsu, and the wonderful elements. Thou art the ruler of all the gods. Thou art Vishnu. Thou hast a thousand eyes. Thou art a god and the final resource. Thou art, O deity, all Amrita, the most adored Soma. Thou art the moment, the lunar day, the bala, the minute. Thou art the kshana, 4 minutes. Thou art the lighted fortnight, and also the dark fortnight. Thou art Kala, thou Kashta, and thou Truti. Thou art the year, the seasons, the months, the nights, and the days. Thou art the fair earth with the mountains and forests. Thou art the firmament resplendent with the sun. Thou art the great ocean with heaving billows and abounding with whales, swallowers of whales and mockers, and various fishes. Thou art of great renown, always adored by the wise and by the great rishis, with mind wrapped in contemplation. Thou drinkest for the God good of all creatures the soma juice and sacrifices, and the clarified butter offered with sacred invocation. Thou art always worshipped at the sacrifices by brahmanas, moved by desire of fruit. O thou of incomparable mass of strength, thou art sung in the Vedas and Vedangas. It is for that reason that learned Brahmanas, bent upon performing sacrifices, study the Vedas with every care. Thus ends the 25th section of the Astika Parva, the Adi Parva. Right, so you can see is the connection between the various stations of the gods. So Indra, he has his post, so there's the prominent point, but he has connection into all these other things. Does that make sense? So all of Krishna's energies, then they all are connected to each other. Right? Just, you call one thing because it's more prominent. Does that make sense? You know, it prominently has that quality, so then you call it by that name. Does that make sense? Section 26. Sauti said, and then Indra, the king of gods, having the best of horses for his bearer, thus adored by Kadru, covered the entire firmament with masses of blue clouds. And he commanded the clouds, saying, pour ye your vivifying and blessed drops. Right? Vivifying means they give, you know, energy and refreshment. And those clouds, luminous with lightning and incessantly roaring against each other in the welkin, welkin means the sky, poured abundant water, and the sky, in consequence of those wonderful and terribly roaring clouds that were incessantly begetting vast quantities of water, looked as if the end of the yuga had come. And in consequence of those myriads of waves caused in the falling torrents, the deep roar of the clouds, the flashes of lightning, the violence of the wind, and the general agitation of the sky, looked as if dancing in madness. The sky became overcast, and the rays of the sun and moon totally disappeared in consequence of that incessant downpour. And upon Indra's causing that downpour, the Nagas became exceedingly delighted, and the earth was filled with water all around. And the cool, clear water reached even the nether regions. And there were countless waves of water all over the earth. And the snakes with their mother reached in safety the island called Ramaniaka. And so ends the 26th section of the Astika Parva, the Adi Parva. So you see, as the rain here on the earth, then it also seems to have some connection to the lower planets. So if it rains nicely here, they also are getting water. Section 27. Sauti said, and then the Nagas, drenched by that shower, became exceedingly glad, and borne by that bird of fair feathers, they soon arrived at the island. That island had been fixed by the Creator of the universe as the abode of the Makaras. And there they saw the terrible Lavana Samudra, ocean of salt. And arriving there with Garuda, they saw there a beautiful forest washed by the waters of the sea, and resounding with the music of winged choirs, means, you know, so many birds. And there were clusters of trees all around, laden with various fruits and flowers. And there were also fair mansions all around, and many tanks full of lotuses. And it was also adorned with many lakes of pure water. And it was refreshed with pure incense, breathing breezes. And it was adorned with many a tree that grew only in the hills of Malai, and seemed by their tallness to reach the very heavens. So the trees that grow on the hills only on the hills of the Malaya are the sandalwood. So they were so big that they were like touching the skies. And there were also various other trees whose flowers were scattered all around by the breeze. And that forest was charming and dear to the Gandharvas, and always gave them pleasure, and it was full of bees maddened with the honey they sucked. And the sight of all this was exceedingly delightful. And in consequence of many things there, capable of charming everybody, that forest was fair, delightful, and holy. And echoing with the notes of various birds, it delighted greatly the sons of Kadru. And the snakes, after arriving at the forest, began to enjoy themselves. And they commanded the Lord of Birds, Garuda, the great energy, saying, convey us to some other fair island with pure water. Thou ranger of the skies, thou must have seen many fair regions while coursing through the air. Garuda, after reflecting for a few moments, asked his mother Vinata, saying, why, mother, have I to do the bidding of the snakes? Right? She's thinking, what's going on here? Right? They're snakes. I'm a big bird. I'm powerful. Why do I have to take care of them? Vinata, thus questioned by him, spake under that ranger of the skies, her son, invested with every virtue of great energy and great strength, as follows. Vinata said, O thou best of birds, I have become from misfortune the slave of my co-wife. The snakes, by an act of deception, caused me to lose my bet and have made me so. When his mother had told him the reason, that ranger of the skies, dejected with grief, addressed the snakes, saying, Tell me, ye snakes, by bringing what thing, gaining a knowledge of what thing, or doing what act of prowess, we may be free from this state of bondage to you. Sauti continued, The snakes hearing him said, Bring thou Amrita by force, then, O bird, shall you be free from bondage. And so ends the 27th section in the Astika Parva of the Adi Parva. Right, so the snake said, You give us the nectar, and then you can go free. Section 28. Sauti said, Garuda, thus addressed by the snakes, then said unto his mother, I shall go to bring Amrita. I desire to eat something in the way. Direct me to it. Vinata replied, In a remote region in the midst of the ocean, the Nishadas have their fair home. Having eaten the thousands of Nishadas that live there, bring thou Amrita, but let not thy heart be set on taking the life of a Brahmana. Right? It means Nishadas are there. Nishadas means they are, father is a Brahman, mother is a Shudra. So you get a Nishada. So there's a place there that all these Nishadas are. So they're considered Varnashankara. They'll always make trouble, right? They'll be inclined to, how do you say? Like Brahminical activities, but they will deal with them as a Shudra would, right? So therefore, then they'll create a disturbance. So he said, eat the Nishadas, but don't eat any Brahmins. Of all creatures, a Brahman must not be slain. He is indeed like fire. A Brahmana, when angry, becomes like fire or the sun, like poison or an edged weapon. A Brahmana, it has been said, is the master of all creatures. For these and other reasons, a Brahmana is the adored of the virtuous. O child, he is never to be slain by thee, even in anger. Hostility with Brahmins, therefore, should not by thee... Hostility with Brahmins, therefore, would not be proper under any circumstances. O sinless one, neither Agni nor Surya truly can consume so much as does a Brahmin of rigid vows when angry. By these various indications must thou know a good Brahmin indeed. A Brahmin is the firstborn of all creatures, the foremost of the four orders, the father and the master of all. Right? So Brahmin can create more trouble than Agni or Surya if they're angry. Garuda then said, O mother, of what form is a Brahmana? Of what behavior and of what prowess? Right? So now we're getting a whole direction on how Brahmins are being protected and what are their qualities. What doth he shine like fire, or is he of tranquil mien? And O mother, it behooveth thee to tell my inquiring self those auspicious signs by which I can recognize a Brahmana. Vinata replied, saying, O child, him should thou knowest as the best amongst Brahmanas, who having entered thy throat would torture thee as a fish hook or burning thee as blazing charcoal. A Brahmana must never be slain by thee even in anger. And Vinata, out of affection for his son, again told him these words, Him shouldest thou know as a good Brahman, who would not be digested in thy stomach. Although she knew the incomparable strength of her son, yet she blessed him heartily. For deceived by the snakes, she was very much afflicted by woe. And she said, Let Marut, the god of the winds, protect thy wings, and Surya and Soba, thy vertebral regions, I guess thy back. Let Agni protect thy head, and the Vastus thy whole body, the Vasus. I also, O child, engaged in beneficial ceremonies, so sit here for your welfare. Go then, O child, in safety to accomplish thy purpose. Sauti, sit here for your welfare. So when her good qualities and everything, then that will reflect onto the, her son here. Sauti continued, then Garuda, having heard the words of his mother, stretched his wings and ascended the skies, and endued with great strength, he soon fell upon the Nishadas, hungry and like another Yama, and bent upon slaying the Nishadas, he raised a great quantity of dust that overspread the firmament, and sucked up water from amidst the ocean, shook the trees growing on the adjacent mountains, and then that lord of birds obstructed the principal thoroughfares of the town of the Nishadas by his mouth, increasing its orifice at will. Right? So the town is there, so wherever they walk, he just made his mouth is that big. And the Nishadas began to fly in great haste in the direction of the open mouth of the great serpent eater. And as birds in great affliction ascend by thousands into the sky, so when the trees in the forest are shaken by the winds, so those Nishadas, blinded by the dust raised by the storm, entered the wide extending cleft of Garuda's mouth, open to receive them. And then the hungry lord of all rangers of the skies, that oppressor of enemies, endued with great strength and moved with great celebrity to achieve his end, closed his mouth, killing innumerable Nishadas following the occupation of fishermen. You know, fishermen, they put their net and then they pull in all the fish. So in this way, then, he created so much dust and everything, the Nishadas couldn't see what was going on, so they all went into his mouth. And so like that, then he, like a fisherman, then caught all the Nishadas. So ends the 28th section in the Astika Parva of Adi Parva, section 29. Sauti continued, a certain Brahmana with his wife had entered the throat of that ranger of the skies. The former began to burn the bird's throat like a piece of flaming charcoal. Him Garuda addressed, saying, O best of Brahmanas, come out soon from my mouth, which I open for thee. A Brahman must never be slain by me, although he may be always engaged in sinful practices. Unto Garuda, who had thus addressed him, that Brahmana said, O let this woman of the Nishada caste, who is my wife, also come out with me. And Garuda said, taking the woman also of the Nishada caste with thee, come out soon. Save thyself without delay, since thou hast not yet been digested by the heat of my stomach. Sauti continued. And then that Brahmana, accompanied by his wife of the Nishada caste, came out, and praising Garuda, wended whatever way he liked. And when that Brahmana had come out with his wife, that lord of birds, fleet as the mind, stretching his wings, ascended the skies. He then saw his father and hailed by him. Garuda of incomparable prowess made proper answers. And the great Rishi Kasyapa then asked him, O child, is it well with thee? Dost thou get sufficient food every day? Is there food in plenty for thee in the world of men? Garuda replied, my mother is ever well, and so is my brother, and so am I. But father, I do not always obtain plenty of food, for which my peace is incomplete. I am sent by the snakes to fetch the excellent Amrita. Indeed, I shall fetch it today for emancipating my mother from her bondage. My mother commanded me, saying, eat thou the Nishadas. I have eaten them by thousands, but my hunger is not appeased. Therefore, O worshipable one, point out to me some other food by eating which, O master, I may be strong enough to bring away Amrita by force. Thou shouldest indicate some food wherest I may appease my hunger and thirst. Kasyapa replied, this lake thou seest is sacred. It hath been heard of even in the heavens. There is an elephant with face downwards, who continually draggeth a tortoise, his elder brother. I shall speak to you in detail of their hostility in the former life. Just listen as I tell you why they are here. Right? There's an elephant and a tortoise, they're big brothers. So the elephant always has his head down and he's dragging the turtle around. Right? So these two monster turtle and horse elephant are always fighting. There was of old a great rishi of the name of Vibhavasu. He was exceedingly wrathful. He had a younger brother of the name Supritika. The latter was averse to keeping his wealth jointly with his brothers. Right? So the elder brother was always angry, and the younger one didn't want to keep his wealth with his elder brother. And Supritika would always speak of partition. Well, it means after, when they get their wealth from the father, their inheritance, they can either keep it together, and then the eldest son manages it just like the father would, and all the other brothers then are taken care of that way, or they can partition it, so each one gets their section, and then they manage it on their own. Yeah? So the elder brother wanted to keep it all together, and the younger brother wanted partition. After some time, his brother Vibhavasu told Supritika, "It is from great foolishness that persons blinded by love of wealth always desire to make a partition of their patrimony." Patrimony means the wealth coming down from the father, right? Matrimony means it's coming from the mother, right? After effecting a partition, they fight with each other, deluded by wealth. Then again, enemies in the guise of friends cause estrangements between ignorant and selfish men after they become separated in wealth, and pointing out faults confirm their quarrels, so that the latter soon fall one by one. Absolute ruin very soon overtakes the separated. For these reasons, the wise never speak approvingly of partition amongst brothers who, when divided, do not regard the most authoritative shastras, live always in fear of each other. But as thou, Supritika, without regarding my advice, impelled by desire of separation, always wishest to make an arrangement about your property, thou shalt become an elephant. Supritika thus cursed, then spake unto Vibhavasu, "Thou also shalt become a tortoise, moving in the midst of the waters." Right, so it's saying here that it is from great foolishness that persons blinded by love of wealth always desire to make a partition of the inheritance. So, see here, and it's not spoken well of. It should be together because they're interested in the wealth, so therefore they'll always be fighting with each other because each one thinks that they should have gotten more. Their friends will always confirm, you know, their side of it, so then they'll fight even more, so that this way they just become destroyed. Does that make sense? So, materialistic people should always stay together, right? They should keep the money together, work cooperatively. Those who are spiritualists, if it's favorable, they can separate only, because then they'll use their money only in the service of the Lord. So they're the only ones that are allowed to separate. Does that make sense? Right? Because if one family does a yajna, you have 10 brothers, they do one yajna. So each technically gets 1/10. Right? But if they separate, then the 10 brothers will do 10 yajnas, and each one will get full benefit. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the only purpose, is that one could increase one's spiritual benefit. But based on material benefit, one should never separate. Yeah? And thus, on account of wealth, those two fools, Supritika and Vibhavasu, from each other's curse, to become an elephant and a tortoise, respectively. Owing to their wrath, they have become inferior animals, and they are engaged in hostilities with one another, proud of their excessive strength and the weight of their bodies. In this lake, those two beings of huge bodies are engaged in acts according to their formal hostility. Look here, one amongst them, the handsome elephant of huge body, is even now approaching. Hearing his roar, the tortoise, also of huge body, living within the waters, cometh out, agitating the lake violently. And seeing him, the elephant, curling his trunk, rusheth into the water. Right? So the elephant is coming and he roars, so the turtle hears, so he comes out of the water. He's starting to come out of the water, and the elephant then seeing the tortoise, then he goes into the water. Yes. It's a pot, so there's always nectar in the pot. How it works exactly, I don't know. But they keep the nectar, and then that way, then they drink some. Okay, I don't think that they're always sitting around drinking nectar. It's just they, at some points, then they drink it. Yeah? and endued with great energy, with motion of his tusks and fore part of his trunk and tail and feet, he agitates the water of the lake, abounding with fishes. And the tortoise also of great strength, with upraised head, cometh forward for an encounter. And the elephant is 6 yojanas in height, right? 6 times 8 means 48 miles tall, right? Okay, remember, Everest is 5 miles. Right? So basically 10 times taller. So that's the tortoise. Oh no, that's the elephant. And twice that measurement in circumference. Right? And the height of the tortoise also is 3 yojanas, and its circumference 10. Right? So the other one is, he's that high and double that width. But the other one is, you know, around. But the other one is then, what do you call it? Only 3 yojanas high, right? Only 24 miles, right? But it's 10 times that around. So he's 30 yojanas around, right? Because tortoises are like flatter and wider. And elephants are taller and thinner. Eat thou up both of them that are madly engaged in the encounter and bent upon slaying each other, and then accomplish the task that thou desireth. Eating that fierce elephant, which looketh like a huge mountain and resembleth a mass of dark clouds, bring thou Amrita. Right? All they do is fight, so eat these two guys and then, you know, bring a little peace to the region, right?
Both
of them
will be happy.
Yeah. The other one died. Yeah. Each will be happy that the other one died, right? Sauti continued, having said so under Garuda, he, Kasyapa, blessed him, saying, blessed be thou when thou art in combat with the gods. Let water pitchers filled to the brim, brahmanas, kine, and other auspicious objects bless thee, thou oviparous one. Oviparous means born from the egg. Right? And, O thou of great strength, when thou art engaged with the gods in combat, let the rishis, the yajus, the samas, the sacred sacrificial butter, all the mysteries, Upanishads, constitute thy strength. Right? So his strength is coming from the great sages and from the Veda and from the sacrifice of the fire and the Upanishads, right? Garuda, thus addressed by his father, wended to the side of that lake. He saw that expanse of clear water with birds of various kinds all around. And remembering the words of his father, that range of the skies, possessed of great swiftness of motion, seized the elephant and the tortoise, one in each claw. And that bird then soared high into the air. And he came upon a sacred place called Alamba and saw many divine trees. And struck by the wind raised by his wings, those trees began to shake with fear. And those divine trees, having golden boughs, feared that they might would break. And the range of the skies, seeing that those trees capable of granting every wish were quaking with fear, went to other trees of incomparable appearance. Right? So these trees were being fearful, so he didn't want to bother them, you know, with his, you know, the wind coming from his wings. So he flew off to other trees that were there. And those gigantic trees were adorned with fruits of gold and silver and branches of precious gems. Right? And they were washed with the water of the sea. And there was a large banyan among them which had grown into gigantic proportions that spoke unto that lord of birds, coursing towards it with the fleetness of the mind. Sit thou on this large branch of mine, extending 100 yojanas, and eat the elephant and tortoise. Right? So the tree itself invited him to come. 100 yojanas, so 800 miles long, is the one branch. Right? When that best of birds, of great swiftness and a body resembling a mountain, quickly alighted upon a bough of that banyan tree, the resort of thousands of winged creatures, that bough, also full of leaves, shook and broke down. Right? So he's so big and powerful that he's sitting on a branch that is 100 yojanas long, and just by sitting on it, it broke. So we can understand how big and powerful is Garuda. So ends the 29th section, Astika Parva of the Adi Parva. Any questions on this? Yes.
I think there were some other things also on Indra and other demigods, Agni mentioned. Also in Veda, actually, the Veda begins like that also, discusses all those different demigods, gives definition to each demigod, what they are in charge of, and what actually they function, what the people approaching them for, and so on. So I was thinking maybe there's a connection, maybe there's some principles which are mentioned there.
Well, your main directions in that are all connected. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like Varuna is the god of the waters, but he's also one of the Adityas, so he's also a sun god. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yes. So, and Indra is because he's the king of the demigods. Mm-hmm. Therefore, all the potencies that all the demigods have are at his command. Mm-hmm. So even though he may not himself do something, he can give the order by which the demigod will do it, so then you'll consider he also has that potency. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So even though personally he may not have it, but it means he does with the clouds and the rain and the lightning and like that. But along with that then go the wind and, you know, the water and all these different things. So they're all connected in that way. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, I was thinking also, Sunday, maybe with astrology it corresponds with different planets and different moods and different, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know, just I was thinking because Veda is bringing me that, and after that they explain every single thing, how they interrelate with each other, and basically those principles apply for all education or whole education system.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, just I never could work it out how it actually functions.
You just have to put it down and see. Mm-hmm. Take the 8 directions and then put the planets that go there, put the demigods that go there. Mm-hmm. You know? Like that, then it will start to make some sense. Yeah. Anything else? Something? Nothing? Yes? No. No one else. Oops. Yeah. Okay. So end here, because now next is that. The branch that he broke off, then there's a bunch of sages sitting on it. So now Garuda has to figure out what he's going to do. There, you know. Okay, so we'll continue there tomorrow.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.